Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for joining me on your Sunday evening or afternoon, depending on where you are. Hey, well, today we've got a special guest again. My son Jamal is back by popular demand, and so he'll be here to share some things with us and talk to us about the video games controversies that are out there about whether or not video games impact, children, radicalization of children through video games, et cetera. We'll be talking about that as well. We're also going to be talking about pre-attack behaviors of active shooters. We started that last week. We're going to finish that up today. And then I'm also going to be talking to you about some safety holiday tips for the home. You know, last week we had that conversation regarding safety tips on a personal level. This week we're going to be talking about for the home. All right. Okay. But first, as always, I want to send a shout out. This time I want to send a shout out to Sandy Hook and the survivors of Sandy Hook and their families, et cetera. Yesterday was December 14th. Sandy Hook, the name Sandy Hook and Columbine are the main two schools that we think about, Parkland, Florida. When it comes to these active shooter situations with kids, these are the three that stand out. Well, yesterday was the anniversary of Sandy Hook. And our condolences still go out to those families that are out there. Another shout out. We got another police officer down. You know, always keep up with that. Detective Seals was killed a few days ago. That had to do with the shooting at the Kosher Deli, which I'll be talking about as well, because I've got some comments by some listeners that will respond to that. Okay, let's start out by talking about emails. But first, hey, Jamal, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, no problem. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. So we'll have some fun talking about this video game stuff. But first, I want to get into the emails. Jim, I listened to the show last week when you gave personal safety tips for the holidays and home safety tips for the upcoming show. Too late for us. Our daughter ordered a Christmas gift on Amazon. The UPS driver, upon delivery, sent a picture of the package being left at the front door. And then sent that out to our daughter, who immediately called me to dash over to pick it up from the front porch. I jumped in the car and drove over there, which took me 10 to 15 minutes. The package was gone already. We had heard about these things, and even with the quick response, it didn't work. Any thoughts? Sue from Palm Bay, Florida. Well, Sue, unfortunately, it didn't work for you. But for the rest of our listeners out there that haven't been experiencing this, yeah, the UPS trucks are easily identified. We've heard about those situations. You know, they also deliver. You can have Amazon deliver it directly because Amazon doesn't have the same signage for the people that are delivering. I know we've gotten a few packages, and we didn't order it to be delivered through UPS. Amazon, the cars are basically unmarked, so these individuals aren't out there following them because they don't know that they're making these deliveries. UPS is easy to follow because the UPS trucks make deliveries. So from that standpoint, let's talk about 10 holiday or a few holiday safety tips. And hopefully, you know, you'll have a better holiday and these kind of things won't happen again. So let's get on to it. There's a few things I want you to keep in mind. Now, you already know that holiday thefts tend to rise in the months of November and December. That's just the way that it is. And the best thing to always do is to make sure you secure everything that you can. Lock up your cars, lock up your trucks, and lock up your homes. Now, in terms of the lights being left on, thieves usually don't approach homes that appear to be occupied. So leave on outside lights at night, as an example, even if you have to put them on a timer. And when you leave the house during the day, leave on some of the lights inside the home to give the appearance of somebody's home. I mean, even for us, we set our timers up so that the lights come on and on, on and off at different times. It's just it's a smarter thing to do these days. Now, the package deliveries, more people are purchasing gifts online. Those are the times that we're living in. So as I told you, be very careful about that. Don't necessarily use the UPS delivery system. I know that might be a little bit cheaper, but you're also trying to secure the gifts that you're ordering to bring home. The other thing is dispose of your present boxes creatively. Place the 60-inch TV box that you got for that big old TV. Just think about it. People are looking to burglarize your home. So those big boxes like that, make sure you cut them up, put them in small. Just don't stick them out there by those trash cans, because then you're sending a signal out to people that, hey, guess what we have now, a 60-inch TV inside the home. So get rid of those boxes. Don't just leave them, you know, stacked by the trash cans. You know, don't be lazy. Cut them up and dispose of them properly. Now, the other thing I want to talk to you about is the social media. People love getting on social media and talking about where we're going, what we're doing, and all those kind of things. Look, I've mentioned this before. When, you know, when you put that information out there, it's the internet. People have access to that information. Hackers have, that kind of information that you're putting out there. So be very cautious about putting things on the internet and social media regarding, you know, your comings and your goings. All right? Okay. Let's look at a few more things I want to make sure I don't forget here. Get a home security system. Some of these home security systems are very good. You can upgrade your security system now so you can see who comes to your front door. I mean, these things are all over the news. You can respond to it as if they think that you're inside the house or a short distance away. So think about those as well. All right? Now, the last thing I want to tell you is leave your curtains as they normally are. People don't realize that. If you lock up the house and you've got the blinds all tightly closed, the curtains pulled across, that lets people know that a person is not home. So think about that, all right? Leaving those curtains the way that they normally are will be a lot safer for you, okay? So don't lock it up and shut it down like that. And if you can, keep a car parked in the driveway. That lets somebody think that you're at home. Even if you have to ask a neighbor to park in the driveway, et cetera, it's just the safest thing to do. And don't forget, putting your mail, on hold at the post office. So now the mailbox isn't being stuffed and overflowing with mail because you're going to be gone for a certain amount of time. All right. So there you go. I hope that you all have a nice holiday. I'm sure we'll talk about that. Use also this drop-off places now. Apparently, producers holding up a sign to me saying that there's drop-off places now where they can drop packages off and things of that nature. So that's out there also. All right? So let's utilize some of these things. Jamal, you got any suggestions?
Yeah. Also, if the package is small, you can have it delivered to your job. That's what I usually do. Have it, if it's something small, might have it delivered to the office, get your package, if you're in that kind of working environment.
Right, right. And that's a good point, Jamal. But I'll remind you right on the air, Sunday, that our particular location where you work with me, we have a policy against employees having packages delivered to the office. So now that I know you're violating the policy, I'll talk to you on Monday at work about that. No, I'm just kidding, everybody. We're just having fun with it. But okay. Yeah, if your job permits it, then that's fine. So especially maybe just during the holiday season or something.
Right.
I don't know that I'd make that part of a routine. Some businesses not, but that's not a bad suggestion either. Okay, email number two. I saw in the news that the two shooters at the Kosher Deli in New Jersey were African-American. Oh, before I forget, by the way, if anybody has any comments or they want to be able to call in about any of these things, you probably know the number now. By now. It's actually on there, I think, as well, on the website. But it's 818-602-4929, okay? 818-602-4929, in case you have any questions or comments about anything that we're talking about today, or in case you want to ask Jamal any questions. Anyway, all right, Jim, I saw in the news that two shooters at the Kosher Deli in New Jersey were African-American. I was shocked by this because usually the synagogue shooters are white supremacists. It is my understanding that these two killers were associated with a militant black organization. I don't believe I hear about African-Americans doing things like that. Am I correct? John from Syracuse, New York. John, you're actually not correct on that note on a couple of different levels. First of all, for those of you who are not familiar with what happened, there was a shooting in the New Jersey area a few days ago, sad situation, where four victims were killed. And the way it started out actually was that there was a nearby cemetery where these two individuals were. One was 47-year-old David Anderson and 50-year-old Francine Graham. Now, there was a detective, and that's the shout-out that I sent out earlier, named Joseph Seals. Detective Seals recognized these two individuals as possible suspects in a murder that had taken place a few days before. So apparently he approached them about it, and that's where he was shot and killed. From there, they went to this Kosher Deli. and where they ended up killing four people, and then you know, subsequently they were killed by law enforcement as well. But I want to correct you on a couple of things, John. One is that when you said that they were affiliated with this black radical group, the group that he's talking about is called the Black Hebrew Israelites, and the word has it that they had an interest in that group. I'm not sure that they were actually members per se of that group. Now, for those of you who do not know what that group is, it's technically considered a, how do I want to put this? It's considered probably one of the hate groups in the country because of the ideologies that they espouse. But let me just tell you more directly who they are. Black Hebrew Israelites are groups of black Americans who believe that they are descendants of the ancient Israelites. And to varying degrees, black Hebrews adhere to the religious beliefs and practices of both Christianity and Judaism as well. Now, they are not associated with the mainstream Jewish community and do not meet the standards which are used to identify people as Jewish by the Jewish community. So they are held out separately. Anytime you have somebody being held out separately, they're not accepted for whatever reason, then you have some kickback from people, etc. So I'm not going to get into a heavy piece of this, but I just want to make sure, John, that you understand that they're not necessarily affiliated with, per se, that particular group. Now, you also made a comment about the fact that the you don't hear about these things. You know, you hear about white supremacists with the synagogue shootings, and that part is probably very true. But just remember, there's over 1,000 hate groups in this country. All of those are not Caucasian. We have black militant groups out there that do, get into this type of violence, quite frankly. So it's out there. The number is not as great, but they are out there. So just to let you know that, okay? All right. Let's go to our third email. As a previous police officer, how do you feel about the continued issue of Starbucks employees denying service to police officers? Recently, I heard about two Riverside sheriff's deputies that were denied service. This is Riverside, California, by the way, people, that were denied service at a Starbucks. They were apparently standing around waiting. They weren't being served. One of the officers asked, hey, is anybody going to service? And the staff were snickering, maybe, maybe not. Even the customers were a little bit nervous about it, meaning that they didn't understand why these individuals were being refused service. So, at any rate, so recently I heard about two sheriffs being denied the service. This continued disrespect for law enforcement is wrong, and certainly a national chain like Starbucks should not condone this kind of behavior. Personally, I will not be going to Starbucks anymore. That's from Michelle from Riverside, California. Michelle, yes, I have actually heard about that. And the sad part about it is that this is not new. It happened in Riverside, but it also recently happened, as an example, in Tempe, Arizona, that there was a similar issue. There was also an issue that also happened in Oklahoma. All of these are recent situations. And yes, you're right. I was a former police officer. I do not agree with this, but I don't know. You know, there's a negative attitude out there about policemen and things of that nature. And Jamal, what do you think about this?
I personally think, like any other business, you have the right to refuse service to anyone. Now, with that being said, people also have the right to not take their business there. If you are, you know, support the law enforcement and a business decides to treat a law enforcement officer this way, you have the right to hurt them in the pockets. And I think that's the best way to handle it. I always think it's dangerous trying to force businesses to serve this person but not that person and things like that. Also, I want to know what's going on in those communities that these businesses or, you know, did this to these police officers. Is there some kind of injustice going on locally that triggered this? I mean, I think everything, there's a reaction for a reason. I don't think this was done for any reason whatsoever. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but what was the cause?
You know, the problem is that we can't control people's emotions. There's been a lot of negative press in the last few years regarding police officers and these shootings and things of that nature. And some people are having a knee-jerk reaction to it. We're living in different times, you know, Jamal. We have some of these people that are coming up now that are younger people. You know, back in the day, we all respected police officers. You know, the police officer was in the community. I'm from New York. These are police officers that also walk the beat. You know, they knew everybody. They knew the local grocer. They knew the local butcher. They knew everybody on the street. You know, whether or not this system that we're living in right now, because of the fact that the media sometimes plays some of this up from a negative standpoint, is my belief. Right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm not saying there aren't police officers out there that haven't made mistakes. They've made mistakes. But from an overall perspective, I can tell you, having you know, worked patrol where people, you know, like one of these businesses as an example, trust me, somebody robs that store, they'll be the first one dialing 911 and wanting help, all right? So I'm not going to say we're going to slow roll to that call, but I'm going to tell you something. They'll still do their jobs as they're supposed to do it. But when you walk into a place like Starbucks and you're just asking for a cup of coffee, as an example, the one in Tempe, Arizona, their argument was, what they were saying was that they actually asked a police officer to leave because they said they didn't think their customers felt safe with the police officers there. I mean, I think that is absolutely ridiculous. How can you not feel safe with police officers there? You can enact a shooter walking through that door and you got police officers standing there. How can you feel, you know, not feel safe? The other one that was in Oklahoma, they went in there to buy some coffee, and they turned around and put on the label. So you know how at Starbucks they'll ask you your name, and then they put your name on the cart, right? Cup, right? Well, they put pig on the cup. Now, why is that necessary?
I think that's out of line. I don't care if you don't like the you're better off not serving them than to put something like that on the cup. For whatever reason you don't want them there, don't have them there. But don't do something like that. And I think that's out of line, and it'll probably hurt business in the long run for them. Again, the best way to hurt any business, if you want to, is hit them in the pockets.
Absolutely. I just don't patronize the business. You remember that time when you were younger, Jamal, and I was upset with Blockbusters about something? What did I do? For 2 years. Remember that?
For 2 years. We couldn't watch movies from Blockbuster for 2 years.
That's exactly right. You know, so that's how you do it. You don't patronize the business. But I will say, to be fair to Starbucks out there, you guys, Starbucks did release an official apology to the officers, in which they called any incident like this with them as absolutely unacceptable. So, you know, now the departments are trying to work with Starbucks from a community standpoint, where they're trying to all mend fences, and I think that that's a good thing. And I'm sure Starbucks has talked to their employees about that, because, look, Starbucks is a national chain. They don't want issues like this out there. It's negative publicity, quite frankly. So, I don't know. We'll wait and see what happens. But as I told you, you asked me how I felt about it, Michelle. That's how I feel about it. I think it's out of line. As you can see, Jamal and I have a difference of opinion about necessarily people who they want to wait on people, not wait on people. When you're serving the general public, in my opinion, you're in a whole different ballgame at that point. But a lot of these businesses have signs up: we have the right to refuse anyone. I'm not sure that those employees at that Starbucks are the people that have the right to refuse. A manager might be different. Somebody's out of line, that might be different. Somebody's outside of the dress code for coming into the establishment, that might be a little bit different. Would you agree with that?
It sounds reasonable. Right. That sounds reasonable.
Okay. All right.
Hasn't Starbucks had in the past, like, different training sessions for even, like, for kicking people out before?
Yeah, Jamal, you know, you're bringing up a very interesting point, because they had a situation a few years ago where apparently it was a black patron, and they put the black patron out, and then Starbucks had to shut down one day all across the nation, where they had to do either a one-hour training or a two-hour training on sensitivity training as a result of that.
So they went from one extreme to the other, basically?
Hey, I can't speak for all of those independent stores that are out there and all those individuals, but I'm just telling you for sure. I don't know. Right? So if anybody out there has any comments about the police officers and whether or not they be served, not served, whatever the case may be, hey, you're free to call us and give us your comments as well. All right, let's finish up from last week on the pre-attack behaviors of active shooters. We started talking a little bit about it, and I wanted to make sure that we understand that, because, you know, I don't know what it is. Just in the last couple of weeks, Jamal, haven't you heard about a lot of active shooters out there? I mean, it just seems in the last 2 weeks, it's really escalated.
Once again, maybe people in their high in their emotions during the holidays, possibly. I don't know how everybody's doing financially, but, you know, those could lead to some incidents, things going on. Holidays seem like it could bring out the worst in people at times. Not as a whole, but those that are doing good, I mean, those that are not doing so good, you know, they're high on emotions around the holidays.
Well, look, you know, some of them are opportunists.
True.
Okay, so we got opportunists out there because they know people are out there with their money. They know people are out there shopping and things of that nature. Now, I can tell you from a law enforcement standpoint that the there are issues around the holidays, but normally it's around also depression.
Right.
Because some people don't have people in their lives. They're by themselves for the holiday. They get despondent. But that's more on the suicidal side that we see more suicides around the holidays, from a law enforcement standpoint anyway. But the FBI, Jamal, did a study on these pre-attack behaviors of these individuals. And what they found was that 63 active shooters that they examined did not appear to be uniform in any way. In other words, these 63 people were all different in some respect. They weren't all the same. So they couldn't readily identify them prior to the attacking, these individuals attacking based on demographics alone. Another point that they made was that the active shooters take time to plan and prepare for the attack, with 77% of the subjects spending a week or longer planning their attack and 46% spending a week or longer actually preparing, which means procuring the means for doing it, for the attack. The next point, a majority of active shooters obtain their firearms legally. So, you know, we've talked on the show about, you know, the gathering of illegal firearms and things of that nature. But they're saying that there's a percentage of these guys have actually purchased these weapons legally, and there's only a very small percentage that have gotten that have had these firearms illegally. The FBI can only verify that 25% of active shooters in the study had ever been diagnosed with mental illness, which is a common issue and question that comes up with people that, oh, they must be mentally ill because who would kill somebody like that? 25%. Of those diagnosed, only 3 have been diagnosed with a psychotic disorder. So what does that tell you?
Right.
Maybe, you know, mental illness is, you know, not a major factor. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do have a question for you. I don't know, or a statement. I don't know if you heard about the recent incident down in San Diego about a guy who was arrested for rehearsing a mass killing from a hotel in downtown San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
He actually videoed and recorded himself with rifles and guns, and he pointing at a window, bam, bam, not shooting anybody, but going through the motion as if he was rehearsing. And somebody reported to the FBI, and he was arrested.
I've heard about that.
I have a question for you about that.
Okay.
Since he did not shoot anybody, and I don't know if the gun was even loaded or not, what could he be exactly arrested for?
Here's the deal. First of all, sometimes the information isn't made public for what somebody's arrested for, but I'm sure people could find out. I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I know about the incident that you're talking about. So let's understand something. The FBI got reported about a possible mass shooter. So remember something, we're living in different times. Because we're living in different times, you get a call that somebody looks like that they're preparing for a mass shooting, they're going to respond. So when they respond, they probably had a search warrant, okay, to be able to go in. Once they get in there, they could very easily find things in his possession that he's not entitled to have there.
Right.
So who knows about whether or not they found, you know, illegal weapons, maybe they found bombs, you know, explosive devices, things of that nature. It could be any one of those things, and they're going to be tight-lipped. They're
right.
Not going to put it out there exactly why the person was arrested. So when they say rehearsing, you know, that he was doing these things, he may end up being released. Maybe at some point they're going to release him after they've had a chance to talk to him. But the initial reaction would be to probably arrest him, go down, and be able to talk to him. They can't interrogate him just in his home. They're going to take him down to the station.
Right. Now, because he's not necessarily committed a felony, possibly, let's just say he just wasn't convicted of a felony or found a felony offense, could they confiscate his weapons, even though it might have been just a misdemeanor? Because to keep the public safe, it seemed like this is one of those things, a gray area. All of his weapons should be confiscated from him permanently.
Well, no, because, look, we got the Fourth Amendment right against search and seizure.
Okay,
Fourth Amendment is going to protect him that they just can't take his property. They could take his property if they think that he's going to use it in a crime, et cetera, or if any of those weapons were illegally purchased. If the weapons are legally purchased and they can't establish that he was going to do something, those things would be returned to him. Now, what we don't know is his criminal background, if whether or not he has one. Sometimes is what we find is that these individuals, you know, get arrested. Like, let me give you an example. Let's go back to the New Jersey shooting that I was just talking about a few moments ago. What people don't generally know is that another person now has been arrested in that shooting. Now, we know about the two people that the police officers killed because they did the shooting.
Right.
Well, on the body of one of those individuals in the person's back pocket, they found a phone number and an address. So they responded and went there. So they had the person's name, a phone number, and they also had an address. The address that they got was for a pawn shop. So they went in there, okay, and when they opened up the safe that was in there, because they would get a search warrant, et cetera, they found some illegal weapons. The person who, it was an AK in there, or AR-15 in there. There were some other things in there. And the person whose name they had found was in possession of weapons that, and he was not supposed to have them because he had a criminal past. Wow. So you never know about what's going on.
Right.
So I don't know this guy's criminal past, not having a criminal past, so who knows, okay, from that perspective. Now, I will tell you also that active shooters were typically experiencing multiple stressors in the year that they attacked. So these are people that have issues in their lives, whether it's personal issues, work-related issues, and things of that nature. But on an average, according to the FBI, each active shooter displayed 4 to 5 concerning behaviors over time that were observable by others around the shooter. The most frequently occurring concerning behaviors related to the active shooter's mental health, problematic interpersonal interactions, and also leakage of violent intent. Talking about what they're getting ready to do, people not responding to that. Now, when concerning behavior for active shooters under the age 18, school peers and teachers were more likely to observe concerning behaviors than their family members, according to the FBI. So there's indicators that are out there. People aren't paying attention to them, and that's part of the problem. Now, let me give you some other facts real quick. In the majority of cases, 64%, at least one of the victims was specifically targeted by the active shooter. So that's important. 64%, the active shooters were actually targeting somebody. You find that most common in the work environment because they're going back up there either after a supervisor, coworker, things of that nature.
Right.
All right. Now, I'm going to give you some quick statistics because I do want to get into this issue about the video games, et cetera, as well. But let me just give you some quick stats here. Now, age of the shooter, the youngest active shooter in this study, 12 years of age. The oldest one, 88 years of age. 12 to 88. Look at that distance, but so to speak, between an active shooter, 12 and 88. I don't know what the heck an 88-year-old is thinking about doing active shooter, to be perfectly honest with you. So I'm not sure who that was in this study. 12-year-old, yeah, well, we've had 12-year-olds with shooting, you know, with these schools, et cetera. But I'm going to give you some quick stats. 13% of the people in this study, their age between 12 and 17, 25%, 18 to 29, 9%, 30 to 39, 29% between 40 and 49, 13% between 50 and 59, and 9% between 60 and 69, and then 70 plus is only 2%, which is not totally surprising. But I want to give you the race figures also. Race, 63% were Caucasian, 10% Asian, 16% Black, 6% Hispanic. Middle Eastern, who so many people are afraid of, 3%. And Native Americans, only 2%. The next stat I found very interesting, and I'll share that with you, the highest level of education. You don't look at these things in terms of the education of the person. But, Jamal, they're talking about, listen to this. Unknown is 36%. That was the highest one, okay? But completed none or some high school, 7%. Completed high school, 20%. Attended community college, 11%. Four-year college, 11%. Completed 4 years of college, 7%. 2% with some graduate education. And 5%. That completed either a master's program or a doctorate. Again, these are, I mean, they really did a good job with figuring out all of this with these stats. Now, the last one I'm going to give you is employment. The active shooters who are under 18 years of age were all students. So look at this. Unemployed, 38% were unemployed. employed was 44%. But that's not totally surprising because you hear about these workplace shootings, 44%. And remember, businesses, they're at 49% of all of the active shooter situations. Now, students were at 7%, other at 4%, retired was 4%, disabled, 2%. I don't know who, I've never seen the stats on a disabled active shooter, but 2% is there. And then they had a 2% in terms of unknown. Last one, criminal convictions, 18 years of older, 14%. They said society had to do it with, let's see, 6% had to do with property, 89% for felonies or misdemeanors, 89% had no criminal record. 89% no criminal record. See, that's what makes this hard, Jamal.
Right.
You know, because when they do these studies on these guys, you find out some, like the shooter, Paddock in Las Vegas, no criminal record. You know, so we don't know to this day why they, you know, why he did what he did, but that's besides the point. A lot of times we don't find out. Time spent preparing, 28%, 24 hours. 26%, 1 to 7 days. 22%, 8 to 30 days. 11%, 1 to 2 months. 9%, 3 to 5 months. And only 4% planned it for 6 to 12 months. So as you can see, a large majority of them planned this within a 24-hour period. How can you catch up with somebody that quick within a 24-hour period? You know, that makes it tough. And then 26% period within 1 to 7 days. That means a person gets the idea within 24 hours to a week, and they move on this. That's hard to catch.
Right.
That's hard to catch. So at any rate, look, I wanted to give you those stats and wanted to get back to there, and then I want to jump into this piece about the video games. You know, Jamal, I remember when you were younger, son, we used to play the Nintendo. We used to get out there and play things like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and all kinds of fun. Remember those days?
Yes, I do. I also remember you sneaking into my room at 11 o'clock at night to play those video games, Mike Tyson Punch-Out. That's
yeah,
what you was
let me remind you, we're on the air, Jamal. I got a fan base out there. They don't need to know that. It is definitely true, though. I did do that, wake him up in the middle of the night. Dad, what are you doing? I'd be over there with Mike Tyson's Punch-Out having a good time. But at any rate, but you know what? We hear a lot on the news and people generally speaking about these video games. So let's break this down into two different areas. The first thing is whether or not these things really impact our children. And then we'll get into some of this, you know, statistical type of stuff that we have. But the second part of that I want to talk about has to do with terrorism and these video games, because we're talking about two separate things here.
Right.
All right? So why don't you share with us, what's your opinion about this business about do violent video games lead to aggressive behavior? And let me just, before Jamal answers, neither one of us have a degree in child psychology or any of those kind of things. So let me just tell you that. Okay? So we're talking from a general standpoint and some of the things that we have researched to find out some of these things. All right? Okay, Jamal, well, what's your opinion about this?
Today's world, video games is totally different. I remember I was in my room one day laying on the bed and I heard my son, what I thought was watching a movie. And I said, hey, what are you watching? Because I heard profanity. My son's a teenager, so it was profanity going on. I mean, the language they would use. I'm like, what movie are you watching? He said, it's not a movie, it's a video game. I mean, a video game using the language that they're using. I mean, I never would have imagined we would have came to a world like this. But even with that being said, I refuse to believe that violent video games will make a kid or a child go out into the world and commit some of these crimes that they commit. I don't really believe that. Now, it also depends on the type of kid also that's playing these games. There's some kids, if you know they have a behavioral issue, they're kind of aggressive, you may not want them playing those kind of games because it might trigger something.
And what about watching movies? There's violent movies out there.
I agree with that too. And some movies is not for kids. And these video games I was just mentioning, it has on there, you know, warning that only adults could buy it. I know my kids are trying to go buy some and they say, hey, I got to be 18 and over to get that. So once again, it comes back. Are the parents buying these video games for the kid and not paying attention?
Or are the kids sneaking them in, Jamal, and getting them from their friends at school?
Or getting from an older sibling, all of the above. But we have to monitor our children.
Well, first of all, let's understand something, all right? Because I've done a little research myself. First of all, it's a $10 billion a year industry these people are out there buying these things. I mean, I remember, you know, trying to do Christmas shopping for your son, okay, and the other grandkids. Those video games are running, you know, things can run for, you know, $90, $100, whatever the case may be. And yet, when you go in there, they're on back order.
Right.
You know, there's people that are out there buying them. And with new gaming systems and updated technology, there's been stiff competition to create the most realistic and interactive games that are out there. They're always trying to improve on that piece of it. Now, you're talking about the most popular games include violent images of people and animals being killed, sexual exploitation, drug use, criminal behavior. All of those are depicted in these games.
It's crazy. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it is extreme.
Well, the 10 games that I have. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have any.
It's a long way from Ms. Pac-Man. I'll tell you.
Hey, don't be telling them I like Ms. Pac-Man. You know, see, that's the problem when you're having your son on the air. He's dropping all the dimes on me tonight. But that's exactly right. I love Ms. Pac-Man, by the way. Let me tell you what the researchers say about the violent video games, to be fair. The research has stated, and let me just say about research. Everybody's got research, okay? So, you know, there's going to be differing points of views on that. But one research said that video games and aggressive behavior in children has been mixed. They say certainly there's some studies that have shown that children who play violent video games do not exhibit increased aggression. Okay, there's a lot of kids out there and there's a lot of games. And the percentage of these kids that actually do something is very small.
Right.
But when it does happen, what do? They blow it up, meaning the media talks about it, and then these issues get raised. Now, let me just tell you, several different studies. One study at one university found that while some children become aggressive, actually others become less aggressive. Hold on a second. We got a caller here. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Yes. Hi, Jim. This is Jim from Jersey.
Jim from Jersey. How you doing, Jim from Jersey? Hey, what's going on out there?
First of all, I just said, I think it's great you brought your son back again. I think he adds a lot to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Jim, I appreciate you calling in, but don't do anything that's going to have me, you know, in a situation where I got to start paying him or something, all right? Because right now it's free labor, man.
Well, then you'd have to change the title of the show. It'd have to be, Listen Up with Potts and Son.
Is anything like Sanford and Son?
Kind of like Sanford and Son, only not as funny.
Well, thanks, seriously,
on your subject about the video games, the problem I have is they've gotten increasingly violent. And granted, most kids are not going to go out and shoot somebody based on the video games. But unfortunately, there's a percentage out there who will get addicted to it. And the thing is that the purpose of most of these games is to kill as many people as possible in the game. And I think what it tends to do is with a lot of kids is that it desensitizes them to violence because they play the game all the time.
Well, I want you to hold that thought. I want to read this one study to you. They found that video games only lead to aggression in children with specific personalities. Children who were high in neuroticism and low in consciousness, for example, tend to become more aggressive after watching violent video games. Another study found that aggressive children tend to choose more violent video games. The researchers found no evidence that violent games caused aggression. So these are two different studies, as you can see with this. So when we talk about these things, are we operating from general knowledge out there, from things that we hear? In your circle, Jim, you're in New Jersey. I mean, do you hear about these things with people having problems with their children in this area? What do you hear out there with your ear to the ground?
No, I don't hear anything, but that doesn't mean that it isn't a problem out there with kids. The whole idea of desensitizing violence, and that's a problem, I think, with video games. Because I played video games years ago, and you know we had Atari, and there was some violent games. And then Doom came along, and that was violent. But it seems like the progression now is the newer games, they get more and more realistic. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. They make it so realistic. They're in 3D. When you play the game, you're handling a you know a, an imaginary gun in the game. And it's it just concerns me that it gets too violent, and it only takes a couple of kids to get an idea.
Oh yeah, I mean the reality is that it only takes one active shooter. It doesn't matter whether it's one in a thousand. When that person does what they do, that's it. Jamal, have you ever played any of these games in terms of looking?
I tried to play Grand Theft Auto, and honestly, I still don't understand the point of that game, but to kill as many people as you can.
That's the purpose of the game.
You can run people over, innocent pedestrians, you can kill them. The police is chasing you, you can kill them, have a shootout with them. I think they even have like prostitutes on the game and things like that. I mean, again, this is supposed to be adult content in video games. That's supposed to be sold to somebody that's 18 and over. But I know kids are getting a hold of these games too.
That sounds like here we go back with the parents again. Parents have got to, because I've said this on the show many times. Jim, I know you're a regular listener. How many times have I said on the show about how parents have got to make sure that they're paying attention to what these kids are doing, you know, on the internet, with their computers, et cetera. Now, I will tell you. Go ahead.
I was going to say, absolutely. The parents have to, they need to restrict the amount of hours I think kids play video games, because some of them like 5, 6, 7 hours on these games, and 5, 6, 7 hours of playing a game where you kill as many people as possible. You know, to me, that's concerning.
Absolutely.
You know, I heard, I read something, I think last year, that China now is making their kids stop being on these games, the internet, and things like that, and I'm actually making them spend more time doing other things other than that. You know, back in the day, what did our parents tell us? Go out and play. Of course, that's all we had back in the day, but that's beside the point. You know, we didn't have all these kind of games and things of that nature.
I remember we played out on the street. We played baseball on the street, or we played football on somebody's lawn or whatever. We played until the sun went down, and then we went in at home and ate. You know, I mean, we didn't have any video games back then.
No, that's true. And then during the winter months, even, we would sit around. We had a large family. We'd sit around playing games like Scrabble and the Game of Life and all kinds of different things to entertain us. But again, those were different times. Jamal, you want to make a point?
Jim, I think you bring up a very good point. There was a time where, I feel like I'm starting to sound old myself, because back in my day, you know, there'd be 20 kids riding bikes down the street, or like you mentioned, playing football on the front lawn. So, and now these kids are stuck in the house. You don't even see that as often anymore. It's like the streets are empty. Even on Christmas, I was outside one day, and I'm like, wow, there's no kids playing with their new toys, but everybody's in the house playing video games. So I think you're bringing up a very good point that these kids are starting to lose social skills also by being cooped up in the house. And that could be very dangerous to our society in general. These kids need to go out and play, and limiting the amount of hours that they play video games is a very good suggestion, I think.
Well, let's talk about where these kids are. There's a difference between kids going out and playing in certain neighborhoods, let's just say, where some of the neighborhoods aren't necessarily the greatest of neighborhoods and parents aren't going to send them out, versus a kid in the suburbs, okay, that has, you know, the free reign of going out and playing, and they've got a lot of yard space and things of that nature. You know, in L.A., you know, the concrete jungle, some of these kids don't have the same kind of exposure, and then they're worrying about these other situations. You were on the show, we're talking about gangs. In those neighborhoods, how many people are going to be sending their kids outside? The times are changed. And the other thing is, you mentioned about Christmas. They're not outside. Well, you know why they're not outside? Because now, because of technology and some of the toys or things that they're getting are so high tech,
right?
These things are played inside, not outside.
True.
And I think that makes a big difference. Now, Jim, I want to mention something to you. The American Psychological Association stance on this issue is that they said that there's a clear link between aggression and video game violence. And this was based on a task force review of research that was conducted for almost an 8-year study. So there are people out there that are, in fact, that are saying that these things are going on. Now, the American...
Oh, sure. I mean, the kids don't have to go out and be a mass shooter, but you're saying it does create more violence, and that gives them a more violent attitude because of these video games.
Well, look, there's a lot of different studies on these things, but I want to make it clear that from all of the things that we've been reading on this, it doesn't state, you know, that every kid, okay, because I'm not trying to throw the scare into all the parents out there, okay, because the realities are, they also say it doesn't mean that all kids who play violent video games will turn into mass murderers. I mean, we got to understand that part of it. The numbers are very low. It's just that it gets built up so high that when it happens, if it's even one time out of 100,000, okay, then it's going to get the attention of the media, and then from there, it just spreads out like a virus all over the place, because now everybody's going to be a little bit more in tune to it. Now, I will tell you that the research has also demonstrated a consistent relationship between violent video games use and a heightened aggressive behavior, aggressiveness that affect and reduce the pro-social behavior, empathy, and sensitivity to aggression, which simply means that these kids are being impacted, whether it's from a positive standpoint, negative standpoint. These kids are still being impacted by these things and influenced by these things. And all situations aren't bad. Some of them are good, from what I'm understanding from some of this.
And I got to believe it was a higher percentage that desensitized. I wonder if they ever did a study on how desensitized the kids are about violence because of these video games. You know, they accept violence as a way of life or whatever. They're just desensitized to it. They should do a study on that.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of studies out there. There's no doubt about it. But let's turn the page for a minute. And while I have you on the phone, you might want to be open to, conversing on this other issue as well. Because as I said at the outside of the show, the one thing about these video games is about children in terms of whether or not, you know, this aggressive behavior. But let's turn our thought process for a second on another part of these video games, and that's on terrorism. Because let me tell you something. This is a different perspective. Now, I will tell you that the Paris terrorists, and you know about Paris, you know about the terrorism acts that have happened out there. Let me just tell you, one of those incidents, the Paris terrorists actually used PlayStation consoles to communicate prior to the attack. So here's a different way that they're using these things, as an example.
Wow.
And I will tell you that the 9/11 Commission report, they reported terrorists using flight simulators and games to increase familiarity with aircraft models and functions and to highlight gaps in cabin security. So here's a different perspective on what people could do with video games. So now we're taking it out of the realm of what kids are doing. Now, Jamal, we're talking about adults using these things to their advantage.
Wow.
Yeah, what's to say terrorists could be using them as training tools?
And that's the next point that I'm getting ready to make, because I'm going to tell you something. These games provide an anonymous virtual environment for both enemy nations and terrorist organizations, completely unfettered access to a communication, recruiting, financing, planning, and operation. That's the other part that we have to understand about all of this. Now, I could tell you that there was a project out there called Reynard, and people can look that up, R-E-Y-N-A-R-D. And that was part of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, where they did the study. The program is to correlate real-world threats or behaviors with in-game behaviors. Okay, now, this is critical, because what's going on now is that our intelligence community is actually monitoring online players. They're looking at this. You know, now, you guys remember the name Edward Snowden, right? You know where he is. He's over in Russia. Edward Snowden, okay? He was the one that brought up the idea about how this stuff continues in various forms. And the government has been actively pursuing these types of issues, including projects to crack, console and, encryptions. So we know that the terrorists are out there using these things, and they're using them against us. Now, the other thing that they're doing is that with these video games, they're actually creating these video games, and these kids are learning about some of these other, about these terrorist groups. I don't want to use the word secretly, but unsuspecting. The child does not realize what metamorphosis that they're going through with this. So I think is what we need to do, and parents to understand, is that we have to set healthy limits on these video games. To me, if a child, as an example, exhibits aggressive behavior, they need to reduce, and this goes back to what you were saying, Jamal, about the parents, they need to reduce the exposure to violent material. Okay, that's going to help us without a doubt. Parents need to limit the child's screen time. They need to be paying attention to what these children are doing on the internet, just in general. I've talked about that before as well. Now, there are groups out there like ISIS. There's groups out there like Al-Qaeda. These groups actually have these video games. We can't stop them from that, because why? Hey, it's a free market. This is the United States of America. People can put things out and they could sell them. You know, people are entitled to their opinions. We don't always have to agree with it, but these things are out there. So, Jim, how do you feel about them using?
Well, aren't there? You can play video games online. You don't have to go out and buy them, right? If you have access to the internet, there are games online, I'm sure. As I was listening to you, I Googled terrorist video games, and there's a lot of stuff. And there's one article there. The title is "Let's Play a Video Game: Jihadi Propaganda in the World of Electronic Entertainment."
See, whoa. There you go. Go ahead, Jamal.
No, I'm saying, whoa, like that's...
That's what I'm trying to tell you. So these things are situations where we, in fact, have got to take a stronger approach to all of this. It's just that simple. You know, we can't take these things for granted. You're wondering about, you know, how kids are being radicalized. That's just the bottom line. I mean, I read something else the other day about Minneapolis, Minnesota, where the highest number of Muslims, believe it or not, there's a high concentration of Muslims there. And it basically is they're being radicalized and recruited, you know, out of that whole area. People don't realize these things. These things are real, and we got to pay attention to them. All right, Jim, I appreciate you calling in. We're going to have to get off the air. But for those of you that have been listening to, you know, it's time to close out the show. You've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, do me a favor, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe. And more importantly, be a reluctant victim.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.